You know, virtually every single day since I started doing this show has had some kind of catastrophe or major event or just something crazy happen. So every so often, it's nice to just sit back and talk about the MyPillow guy. I'm Patrick Cunningham, and this is Socratic Citizen. We are going to talk about the MyPillow guy. I know we talked about it in the chat like yesterday or the day before, and we never actually got to it, but I have it today. It's on the list. We're going to talk about it, so it's going to be good, because he is a fascinating character, and his whole, like, odyssey through reality is also hilarious and interesting. So, but I was checking the news right before coming on here, coming online, because I don't want to be out of date, you know, heaven forbid, do a news show and be out of date. That is to write oneself into immediate obsolescence. So I wanted to point out just real quick that as of 3 hours ago, Axios reports that the Senate votes to advance the budget resolution for Biden's relief plan. Now, this does not mean that Biden's relief plan has passed, just the budget resolution. In fact, some of the headlines I saw said the bill will still likely include the $1,400 checks that everyone is so mad about. In fact, as I heard someone say yesterday, I think Jimmy Dore said, the Democrats are the only people who could manage to give you $1,400 and still make everybody angry. So let's take a look at this. At 5:34 a.m. on Friday, that would be about 3 hours ago, the Senate voted 51-50 to advance the budget resolution that will be used to facilitate passage of President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief proposal, with Vice President Harris acting as the tie-breaking vote for the first time. So, you know, I may have to, you know, back off some of my initial predictions, which were that maybe this tie-breaking vote would not be used so often. But here we are just, a couple of weeks in, and already it's happening. Though, of course, I think it's important that we take a moment and recognize that part of the whole sales pitch of both the Republicans and the Democrats is they have to make a big show of being opposed to each other. And so even though Republicans might favor most of the stuff that's in this bill, indeed, a lot of Republicans were on board with Trump's proposal for $2,000 checks just a few weeks ago, maybe a little over a month ago. But now that it's the Democrats doing it, the Republicans have to say, no, we have issues. We're not going to do this because, you know, this, that, and the other thing. The big issue in this bill, as far as I know, is the education budget. There's something like $120 billion for education. The idea being that $120 billion is supposed to be used to bring up safety precautions for schools or something along those lines. But you get the idea. So why it matters, the article says, passing the relief package via the budget reconciliation process allows Democrats to sidestep the 60-volt threshold needed to approve most major legislation, in theory, because Republicans would otherwise be able to filibuster that legislation. The resolution will now go back to the House for final approval, at which point committees will be allowed to begin writing the bill. Final passage came after 15 hours of debate on amendments proposed by senators. So what I'm curious to find out is whether the $15 an hour minimum wage will actually be in this bill. Because the budget resolution was passed by reconciliation. So reconciliation, for those who are not aware, is a kind of arcane Senate procedure whereby the majority can sidestep the filibuster when they're adding amendments to budget proposals. So you can't just, you know, ban guns by reconciliation. You can't legalize weed by reconciliation, but you can amend budget bills by reconciliation. However, there's supposed to be this rule. It's called the Byrd Rule, from Senator Robert Byrd. And it says that you're not supposed to use reconciliation for anything except for stuff about the budget. Now, Bernie Sanders wants the $15 an hour minimum wage in this $1.9 trillion bill. And a lot of Republicans are opposed to it. A lot of libertarians are also opposed to it, saying it's going to create unemployment, that a lot of companies, specifically small companies, the kind that are already financially destroyed by COVID lockdowns, will not be able to handle this and they will go out of business, that this is a golden ticket handed to the likes of Amazon and Walmart and the giant companies that can afford to take the financial hit of suddenly having to pay all of their employees, whatever, $3, $5, $8 more an hour than they already do. So here's the question. $15 an hour minimum wage is not the sort of thing you'd normally think of as a budget proposal. That is just a regular bill. Now, people like Bernie Sanders have argued that because the $15 an hour minimum wage would result in workers paying more taxes because they'd be making more money. Now, if you take that line of reasoning, however, you can make the case that just about anything is or can be passed by budget reconciliation. You could, in fact, legalize weed by budget reconciliation because, well, you know, people are going to start companies selling weed and then, you know, they're going to pay taxes. So that'll affect the budget. Or we can ban guns because that'll put a lot of gun manufacturers out of business and they'll stop paying taxes and that will affect the federal budget. So it's very interesting the precedent that this is going to set, depending on whether this $15 an hour minimum wage ends up in the bill. I'm inclined to be opposed to it because I'm disinclined to approve of the federal government really like taking away the prerogative of the states to determine what the minimum wage in their state should be. Because as I've mentioned before, I live in Georgia. Georgia's an interesting state because if you go to downtown Atlanta, you kind of feel like you're in New York because it's expensive, it's very urbanized, there's people from all over the world, it's a business hub, and $7.25 an hour, which is the federal minimum wage, and Georgia basically just goes with the federal minimum wage, $7.25 an hour is not going to cut it in downtown Atlanta. But if you drive 80 miles to the northwest of Atlanta, you get to Marjorie Taylor Greene's district, which is a very different world, where $7.25 an hour is probably plenty. Maybe not for a family of four, but certainly enough for a single individual, an early 20-something working their first job. $7.25 is no big deal. So I'm inclined to think that maybe it should be done at a local level, but the most interesting part is not the economic part. As interesting as that is, the interesting part is really whether or not they're going to use budget reconciliation to pass something that is, it's questionable as to whether it's really a budget thing. So anyway, let's move on to the actual topic at hand here. And I know the section's titled Epistles, but it's not really epistles. I really just want to get this in because we didn't get it in yesterday. So this is the Daily Caller's Twitter feed here, and I'm using this because they have this lovely clip of Jen Psaki talking about vaccinations and saying even if you're vaccinated, social distancing and wearing masks will still be essential. You're not home free if you get the vaccine, according to this.
What we're also trying to do is make our health and medical experts available to ensure people understand, and I'll reiterate it here today, it's not just a vaccine. It's obviously an incredible medical breakthrough, and we want every American to have one. But even if you're vaccinated, social distancing, wearing masks are going to be essential, and we'll need to continue communicating about that through health and medical experts.
So what do you say to those folks? What do you say to the folks like those that we saw in this video? I believe one of the folks who owns or runs that store who said he doesn't believe that 450,000 Americans.
Okay, so that's enough of that. So, of course, the question becomes, what's all this about? I thought that once we had the vaccine rolled out, we could all go back to normal and everybody could open back up and we could start making money again and we wouldn't need, you know, $2,000 a month from the government because we would all be making $2,000 a month with our fancy new $15 an hour minimum wage. But apparently that's not the case. And they have not really, like, there's a lot of discussion about, well, you know, you might still transmit the virus even if you can't get the virus. The vaccine's really just about the symptoms. I think the main takeaway here is that trusting the experts has done what trusting the experts always does. It has given the experts a lot of leeway to just say what's convenient, not really have to explain themselves or hide behind medical jargon and say, well, you just don't understand because you don't have all the medical degrees that I do. I went to school for 25 years to be able to even talk about this. So how could you even have an opinion on this subject? Whereas, you know, a less trusting society might demand more. Good morning, Mythos. A less trusting society might demand some real reasons from their experts. A trusting society would not, for example, make a hero of Dr. Anthony Fauci or of whoever Dr. Anthony Fauci's counterpart is in Germany, for example. So this bleeds into an interesting discussion because we have some good news on COVID, and it's not just this, which is the Daily Mail talking about England. I believe California has also seen some very positive numbers, something like a 45% drop in California as well. So, and there's some conspiracy theories circling around it, but we'll get to those in a second. So the Daily Mail reports, why are coronavirus cases falling in the U.S. with a 44% drop in 3 weeks? As the deadliest month of the coronavirus pandemic in the U.S. came to an end, the nation is seeing signs of progress, including plummeting rates of COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations, and accelerating vaccination rates. Daily cases have dropped 45% since the latest peak on January 11th, according to data from the COVID-19 Tracking Project. There were 131,341 new cases reported on Wednesday. Hospitalizations have fallen 26% since they peaked most recently on January 12th, the data shows, with 96,534 reported in the hospital as of Wednesday. And 44 states have seen a decline in cases. So with just Alabama, Louisiana, Montana, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and the District of Columbia on the upswing. Poor New Jersey. They got hit hard with the first wave. They got hit hard with the second wave. And now they're still getting hit hard when just about everybody else is seeing a bit of a relief. And of course, as Mythos, you mentioned, there is this argument that COVID is basically a seasonal disease, that 15 years from now, you won't go get a flu shot. You'll go get a flu shot and a COVID shot. Maybe there'll be one shot. Maybe it'll be you just get jabbed once and then you get jabbed again. Who knows? But I'm inclined to agree with that particular analysis. Now, there is also, of course, the more conspiracy theory type analysis. We all remember the kind of hullabaloo around that announcement that was put out by the CDC on Inauguration Day, which is terrible timing. Regardless of whether this announcement is what the conspiracy theorists say it is, it was still a really bad idea to put it out on Inauguration Day. But supposedly, this announcement from the CDC was telling people to reduce the number of cycles used in this PCR test, which is the metaphor I like to use is it's like turning down the level of magnification of the test so you don't see little tiny, you can't see in quite as much detail, and so you're less likely to pick up evidence of the virus. The idea being, and I guess there is some real evidence of this, that the way the PCR test is being run at 35 cycles or 45 cycles, whatever it was, is likely to pick up a lot of false positives. And so a lot of people who don't have COVID, especially if they're going into the hospital because they're sick, they get tested, people go, oh, the reason you're sick is COVID. That was kind of, a lot of people are saying, that's been like inflating the numbers, that this is not as big a deal as it looks. And that this CDC thing that was put out on Inauguration Day here in the United States was telling doctors and nurses to reduce the number of cycles, but that's not precisely what it actually said. Because I grabbed it before the CDC took it down, and I showed it to a friend of mine who's actually a nurse, and I was like, what does this actually say? Because it's couched in this medical jargon, and I don't really know what I'm talking about with all of this. I don't know what half the words in this thing mean. And he looked at it, and he had to read it like two or three times. He's like, first of all, it's not just you. The writing in this thing is impenetrable. But secondly, he's like, basically, they're just saying, be cautious when you test for COVID. Don't just assume that one test that appears to show a positive is conclusive proof that a person has COVID. He called it a cover-your-ass move by the CDC. I've been saying CDC. It's put out by the World Health Organization, not the CDC. Excuse me. Please forget everything I just said. It's about the WHO. I get mixed up with the alphabet soup of agencies, federal and global. But point being, it didn't look good to put it out on Inauguration Day. That just fed the conspiracy theories. But nonetheless, I mean, I'm inclined to think it's a seasonal thing and that this is just where we live now, that COVID is a thing and it's going to be a thing next year and it's going to be a thing the year after that and so on and so forth. And so when Denmark, for example, says they want to introduce a COVID passport, I believe in order to enter the country, that's basically the same thing as requiring a proof of flu shots to enter the country. So hopefully that can put to rest some of the more conspiratorial minded right wingers who watch this show. I don't know how many of you there actually are who think that, you know, COVID passports and that sort of thing are really like the end of the world. And we're, this is the inauguration of Bill Gates as the evil monarch who will control everything, microchipping you with the help of Elon Musk's video game playing monkey. So it's not as bad as it seems, but it does seem that perhaps the worst of COVID has passed. After coming now, we will have a period of low activity by the virus, the off season, you might say, and we'll have a little bit of a chance to prepare, vaccinate lots of people. So when the new season does come around, it won't be quite so bad. In addition, as the country headed into February, the article says COVID-19 hospitalizations fell below 100,000 for the first time in 2 months. So let's read a couple comments here before we move on to the next segment. Hello, Mythos. Welcome to the stream. This discussion is also held in Germany. Now, as far as I know, Germany has seen some significant conflict around its COVID lockdown policies. I do remember a story of a German doctor who I guess was in the middle of a live stream about how the official story around COVID was not real or something, and I guess the cops kicked down the door while he was live streaming, and so he gets arrested on his own live stream. And you see the cops come over and they turn the camera around. The guy can't figure out how to turn it off. So it appears that Germany is having some conflicts, much like the United States. But and then Shomar says vaccination seems to be working so far. Now, it does seem to be working insofar as people do appear to be getting vaccinated. Now, I don't know if it's this piece that we're looking at here or somewhere else. Right here, actually. However, most officials say that with fewer than 2% of the population fully immunized against the virus, it's too soon to say that vaccines are causing the decline. So for us to say, oh, we rolled out the vaccine and 3 weeks later, the cases are down 44%, that is correlation, not exactly causation. There might be some causation, but to say that there's no other cause and that this is just a sign of vaccination working, I think is a dangerous claim to make. So, of course, that brings us back to the article, actually. So the question remains, why are cases falling so fast in the U.S.? And can the nation stay ahead of the fast-spreading mutations of the virus? So public health experts believe that the decline in cases is likely a combination of a higher number of people who've had the virus than official counts suggest. Because remember, a lot of people get the virus and show no symptoms. And like trying to track the number of crimes that were prevented, it's very difficult to estimate a number of people who get the virus and never realize that they have it. Meaning as many as 90 million people have antibodies against the virus, but again, this is just a guess, and fewer people traveling and holding gatherings than they did over the winter holidays. So this is actually, this is a pretty plausible explanation. I mean, I love to parse whatever conspiracy theories are out there, if they're out there. But in this case, I think the mainstream and official story is actually pretty compelling. I was opposed to kind of the catastrophism that was very much a tendency around this thing. It's not just the U.S., however, the article says the World Health Organization said on Monday it has also seen declining new infections globally over the past 3 weeks. Our World in Data graph shows the daily infection rate has fallen by 30% in that period. But of course, Director General Tedros Adhanom warned against relaxing restrictions to slow the spread of the coronavirus on the heels of the good news. I don't know about what is against relaxing restrictions mean precisely, because we've already seen the World Health Organization say that lockdowns are really not the most effective way to combat the virus. That there's really two reasons. One is that it's very difficult to demonstrate a clear correlative, much less causative relationship between lockdowns and COVID rates. You can look at countries with real strict lockdowns that still had horrible results. Italy was one example. And then you can look at countries that did very little or locked down very little and still had great results, places like South Korea. So it seems like there's not a real perfect relationship between how hard we lock down versus how much of the virus we see or how much of the virus we can prevent. So I don't know about this. He must be talking about something else. So over the past year, there have been moments in almost all countries where cases declined and governments opened up too quickly and individuals let down their guard only for the virus to become roaring back. So, and then Shelmar says Mythos says, oh, I've got a bunch of comments here. All right, so the most important question is, Mythos says, can vaccinated COVIDs transmit to unvaccinated COVIDs? I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to that, but the public experts are really trying their best to put forward this image of, like, we know what we're talking about, I think because of the prevalence of conspiracy theories around this thing. And the problem is that doing that is not a good policy, because you just end up looking like you don't know what you're talking about, and you end up looking dishonest as a result. Shelmar says it's not known why that German doctor was arrested. Well, in that case, then I will not be receiving any information from any of you enlightening me as to why he was arrested. Mythos says it seems that vaccinated people do not pass on the disease. That is good news. It seems that way, and you would expect that, but I've seen plenty of people arguing that no, the vaccine is just about symptoms. And so I'm not sure what to believe precisely. I feel like the default thing to believe is that if you had a vaccine, you don't pass on the virus. That would make sense to me. Sitting around the kitchen table, that's common sense. And I don't know what this word is, Mythos. Shelmar did not recognize? I'm not sure what you mean by that. So anyway, that brings us to the next part of this, which is from the CDC. So CNBC reports the CDC director says schools can safely reopen without vaccinating teachers. Now, this had a big impact. This was a bombshell thing to say, because, of course, the teachers' unions in many places in the United States have been asking for things like every single child tested every single day, or they have to be vaccinated before they can go back to school. Every teacher has to be vaccinated before they can go back to school. They have demand after demand after demand, to the point that many people are looking at them and going, you just don't want to go back to work. You're just enjoying having basically time off and still being paid. And I'm inclined to agree, because I don't have a very high opinion of public sector unions in general. So teachers do not need, the article says, to get vaccinated against COVID-19 before schools can safely reopen, the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Wednesday. Quote, there is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky told reporters during a White House news briefing on COVID-19. Quote, vaccinations of teachers is not a prerequisite for safely reopening schools, she added. Now, this is a bombshell thing to say for a couple of reasons. First of all, because of the teachers' unions. Second of all, because the $1.9 trillion bill that the Democrats are currently shepherding through Congress contains $120 billion to COVID-proof the schools. So if the CDC is coming out and saying, you don't even need to be vaccinated, really, how many safety precautions do you really need in the school? Because, of course, the whole argument is of whether kids are really a vector of transmission. And I've seen people arguing that they are, and I've seen kids arguing that they are not. Now, I here in Georgia and in Florida, our crazy southern neighbor, schools are pretty much open, and we have not heard huge news about teachers or students dying in huge numbers, so I'm inclined to believe that school reopenings are largely safe. And that, in general, as usual, we're better off when the government leaves us alone. People are perfectly capable of figuring out what safety is. And then Hannah 974, welcome to the stream, Hannah. It says, in Australia, students are required to wear masks in class in secondary, but don't have to in primary. And, you know, Australia has the reputation, at least among conservatives in the United States, of being the new liberal hellhole. No insult. That's the conservatives, not me. So, students are required to wear masks in secondary, but don't have to in primary. That is interesting, and it matches with what I feel like I've heard in the past, that really especially young kids are not major vectors of transmission. Public Citizen says, regarding teachers, it is highly dependent on the rate of infection in the community. It's obviously not a one-size-fits-all thing. I would be inclined to agree with that. The thing is, it's just beyond population density, it's very hard to establish what really the conditions and circumstances are that are driving this rate of infection. As far as I can tell, it's really not clear what drives it other than population density. But it can't just be population density, because I feel like there are places with a lot high population density that have seen low rates of infection, not really in the United States, places like South Korea, and then places with low population density that have had terrible results, like South Dakota. And Shomar says, you agree because of your confirmation bias against public sector unions, and yet you choose to selectively trust what bureaucrats say, even when it contradicts their peers, if it conforms to that view. Interesting, since once you said what you said about lockdown efficacy also contradicts what the CDC director said. Well, okay, I don't know about this second part. What I said about lockdown efficacy was that the World Health Organization has argued that lockdowns are not particularly effective. A, because they don't seem to work as well as other stuff, and B, because of the social costs. And then the CDC director said, as far as I can tell, as I remember, that teachers do not need to be vaccinated in order to go back to school. So I don't know. I'm not seeing the contradiction there. Now, you agree because of your confirmation bias against public sector unions. All right, so that's more just me spouting random opinions. It's not a direct syllogistic relationship here. So, and yet you choose to selectively trust what bureaucrats say, even when it contradicts their peers, if it conforms to that view. Well, being a human being, I have my own preconceived notions. And so when someone says something that confirms what I already think, yes, I am more inclined to believe those people. It is unfortunately just a side effect of being a person. So just to make this the case completely clear here, before we move on to the next topic. So the idea here is this: because I tend to be biased against public sector unions, I don't think they don't really need to exist, because the public sector does not have a profit motive. So as a result, I'm inclined to think of public sector unions as kind of an unnecessary, I don't mean this in an insulting way, but in a very literal sense, a kind of parasitic addendum onto the body politic, you might say, as in they do not really contribute much, and yet they do draw resources away. Right. So I'm inclined to agree that they might be making demands that are unnecessary. They might be demanding things that are unnecessary because they like the idea of teachers staying home and getting paid anyway. And yet you choose to selectively trust, you say, what bureaucrats say. I'm assuming you're referring to the CDC director here with bureaucrats, even when it contradicts their peers. I don't know who their peers is, because it seems like we have teachers unions versus the CDC here. We're not really peers as far as I can tell, if it conforms to that view. Okay, so I think I've made my position clear. And then you say, Shelmar, so you're inclined to characterize teachers looking after their own well-being. No, now, to be clear, I said I don't mean parasitic in an insulting way. I mean it literally. In a very literal sense, as in an entity that doesn't contribute to the body politic and yet draws resources from the body politic. And as far as lazy goes, this is not an insult. I'm not like being mean to teachers unions. I'm saying, look, if I could stay home and make money and not have to work, I would also take that. I think most people would, unless you're one of those rare unicorn people who just loves your job so much that you want to do it anyway. And then last comment, we're going to move on to something else here. Public Citizen says the activities of public employee unions are open to criticism, but they are necessary. That is a whole segment episode in and of itself. We'll have to investigate that and take a look at that later on. All right, so let's move on here to a little bit of other stuff. So we have to talk about some fun stuff, of course. So let's do some fun stuff. This is from Politico. And Politico reports, you guys have probably heard this, at least some people have, the QAnon shaman. Remember the QAnon shaman? He has been granted organic food in jail after reports of deteriorating health. So the QAnon shaman, much like Gandhi, managed to extract concessions from the government by refusing to eat. So as it turns out, hunger striking still works, even if you use it for dumb reasons. So Jacob Anthony Chansley, a QAnon believer, oh no, that's the caption, a federal judge on Wednesday ordered that the QAnon shaman, who was charged with taking part in the deadly riots at the Capitol, get organic food in a D.C. correctional facility after his lawyer told the court that his client needed this special diet for religious and health reasons. Because of his, quote, shamanistic belief system and way of life, eating food that isn't organic or has, quote, unnatural chemicals would cause the client, Jacob Chansley, quote, systemic responses that are not simply discomforting, but debilitating and notably dehydrating, attorney Albert Watkins wrote in a filing on Wednesday. Chansley has lost more than 20 pounds and his condition was declining, Watkins wrote. Non-organic food, quote, non-organic food, which contains unnatural chemicals, would act as an object intrusion onto his body and cause serious illness if he were to eat it. An object intrusion is the belief that disease originates outside the body from unhealthy objects coming into the body, Watkins wrote. In shamanic traditions, the body, mind, and soul are interconnected, and the well-being of all three are necessary for my client to be able to practice his faith. Well, this is good news. I now know that if I go to jail, all I have to do is stop eating for a week or so, and then I can get organic food. No half-frozen bologna sandwiches for me if I ever end up behind bars. It really is amazing because this guy, who looks and sounds completely ridiculous, has now lived the adventure of a lifetime. He has sat in the speaker's chair, he has breached the Capitol, and now he has manhandled the DC correctional system to force them to give him organic food. Shamar, I'm inclined to agree. He must be drawing some kind of power from nature. I cannot imagine how else he has managed this. So moving on, Trump has resigned from the Screen Actors Guild with a characteristically Trumpian rant. This is just funny. I don't know if it really even means anything. But former President Trump resigned his Screen Actors Guild American Federation of Television and Radio Artists membership on February 4th. So they tried to have a disciplinary committee hearing to kick him out of the union. And I guess they sent him a letter to that effect. And he replied to the letter quitting the union. And he said, who cares, with an exclamation point instead of a question mark. So it's not a question when Trump says it. He emphasized his screen credits, including for the movies Home Alone 2 and Zoolander, and his reality show The Apprentice, which he called, quote, one of the most successful television shows in history. Trump further claimed the union was unhelpful to him as a performer. Quote, you have done nothing for me, he signed off. So this is just classic Trump. He is undampened by being kicked off the internet almost completely and then harried out of office as he left. and left alone in Florida, where everyone left his or abandoned their membership in his Mar-a-Lago club. So, public citizen, you do not miss Donald. You were just saying the other day how things are boring and you don't miss him at all. Or maybe you've had a change of heart. I don't know. You know, I think eventually I will miss Donald Trump. I will miss the, like, just absolutely unending stream of entertaining stories and bizarre escapades that his presidency brought into reality. We really were living a circus for 4 years. Yes, Mythos, Trump was quite fun, if nothing else. Could be hard to take seriously at times with some of his antics, but he was a lot of fun. And he has changed American politics forever. There's no going back to the pre-Trump era at this point. Forever now and forever after, we are living in the post-Trump world. This is one of the few times in history where you can specifically point to a moment at which one era ended and another began. Everything that happens now, I think, for a long time will be in reference to Trump. So that brings us to some of Trump's people and some of the people that followed Trump around, most notably the MyPillow guy, the guy who was, yes, I had an anchor walk off of an interview with him from Newsmax because he wouldn't stop talking about election fraud. And I guess Newsmax had heard from Dominion Voting Systems lawyers about continued defamation. And so they weren't willing to have anybody on who was going to say bad things about Dominion Voting Systems. So we actually did, Shomar, we did talk about the Green Lady yesterday. We actually had someone join the chat who said, I love Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she explained to us why she loved Marjorie Taylor Greene. I do have a little bit about her today, though, as well. But before we get to her, let's start here. So who remembers David Hogg from the Parkland shooting? He was one of the survivors who turned his experience into a gun control campaign. I'm inclined to think that he's got one of those faces where he just permanently looks very angry. I can't imagine what he looks like smiling, frankly. So David Hogg has launched a pillow company to compete with MyPillow's Mike Lindell. So this is from Axios, and we'll skip the ads here. So March for Our Lives co-founder David Hogg tweeted on Thursday that he and software developer William Legate are launching a pillow company to compete against MyPillow, which is led by Trump supporters CEO Mike Lindell. I think that maybe Mr. Hogg is not quite understanding how business works, because you can't launch a company just to compete against MyPillow. You're also competing against every other pillow company who's also competing against you. So he's like starting a company at Mike Lindell, which, I mean, if he wants to start a company, he can start a company. That's, I mean, no one can fault him for that. But at the same time, I don't know how successful this is really going to be, because I don't know how many liberals were really buying pillows from the MyPillow guy. You'd have to be real unaware of public discourse and recent events to be buying from the MyPillow guy as a left-wing sympathizer. So Lindell is one of President Trump's most adamant defenders and has repeatedly shared unsubstantiated conspiracy theories about the election since President Biden took office. Lindell had a tumultuous interview with Newsmax earlier this week, where anchors attempted to block the CEO from reiterating conspiracies about the 2020 election. And then this is the good part right here. Dominion Voting Systems also sent a cease and desist letter to Lindell last month and ordered him to preserve all documents related to the company. So Lindell told Axios in response, quote, I want Dominion to put up their lawsuit because we have 100% evidence that China and other countries use their machines to steal the election. So he says, bring it on. So far as I can tell, he is the only person who has said, bring on the lawsuits. So we'll see what happens. Apparently, he's willing to go to court to defend his what he says is his 100% evidence that China used their machines to steal the election. despite the Department of Justice finding no evidence to support Lindell's claims about Dominion voting systems or widespread voter fraud. And so Hogg wrote that he and Legate hope to, quote, sell $1 million worth of product within our first year and to launch in about 6 months. We would like to do it sooner, but we have strict guidelines on sustainability and U.S.-based union producers. Hello, trees grow on Earth. We'll get to your comments here shortly. So Mike isn't going to know what hit him. This pillow fight is just getting started. So, Shelmar, I'm sorry, but your joke got preempted. It was already in the article referring to this as a pillow fight. So, it's anti-public citizen says don't click. It's anti-Jewish bull crap. Ah, interesting. Okay, well, F that guy. All right, well, now, I don't know. I'm torn because, frankly, I on the one hand, I don't want to because I don't want to put up horrifying things on my show here. But now I've got like a curiosity killed the cat kind of desire to see what it is. I tell you what, trees grow on Earth. I'm going to take a look at this. And then if it's any good, then I'll use it on the show. So for right now, we're not going to watch it. We'll watch it later if it's any good. So Public Citizen says that news anchor on Newsmax apologized to Mike Lindell. Further proof of the cult mentality of these people. Sad. Well, there's another way to look at it, frankly, which is that Mike Lindell, if you notice, or if you, as I do, watch YouTube channels from some of the more right-wing people that are out there, you'll notice that many of them are sponsored by the MyPillow guy. That so at a time when a lot of companies are going, we don't want anything to do with conservatives, the MyPillow guy has an income stream, he is making money, and he is using that money to sponsor conservative shows. And so I think that he is a bit of a hero in the conservative movement, or the right-wing movement, for that reason. So it might be a further proof of the economic straits of these people. But I don't, and at the same time, he might have apologized because maybe he likes Mike Lindell and sympathizes with Mike Lindell. But I think what really happened there is he had to put on a good show for Dominion Voting Systems lawyers. He had to show we are not putting up with any more defamatory content surrounding Dominion voting systems because we are not willing to go to court and try to defend those claims. Which doesn't say much for the claims, obviously, if you're not prepared to defend them in court. I think you should be prepared to defend them in court, but I guess they're not. So, hello, Peter Parker. Welcome back to the stream. Fat Daddy Sambo, welcome back. I personally find Trump fit the Douglas Adams description of the job of president to draw attention away from those who actually hold power. Sadly, that idea got taken over by the conspiracy theorists who continue to claim the Rothschilds are controlling the world. That, you know, that is interesting, and Douglas Adams was far from the only person to say that. What's interesting to me is it seems almost self-evident with the Biden administration, at least to me, that it's not like Biden is not the helmsman. I feel like Biden is the guy occupying the chair, but it's really a bunch of people around him who are making all these kind of decisions. And then, of course, there was, you know, that stuff that came out about Obama. There was some email chain that came out, not a chain, an email that came out like a back and forth between the Obama team and Citibank talking about who would go to what cabinet position. As far as I know, it has not been debunked or anything. So, you know, you are correct, I think, to a large extent about the nature of just power in general. The people behind the scenes can get away with stuff that the people in front of the scenes can't. Do. And then Dan Stewart says, can't wait for all these election fraud related civil litigation to commence. Looking forward to seeing some of the discovery material produced. Well, Mike Lindell may very well be one of those people. So I'm interested to see what happens when he is not in front of a camera, but is in front of lawyers, the opposing counsel, because I think he'll have to be a little bit more disciplined with what he says. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Sidney Powell, Trump's lawyer, has also suffered a few unfortunate letters announcing that she is being sued. But it will be very interesting because whatever Kraken Sidney Powell does have, she will finally have to release it. And we will have to see whether it really is a Kraken or whether it's something more like a little sea squid. So anyway, let's move on here. So, as we'd already talked about, the Newsmax anchor walking out of the live interview with the MyPillow guy. But then Smartmatic, just to go back to Dan Stewart's comment, has filed a $2.7 billion lawsuit against Fox News. It's the other voting machine company. So Smartmatic accused Rupert Murdoch's network of promoting a false narrative about the 2020 election that damaged the company. In the latest volley in the battle over disinformation in the presidential election, Rupert Murdoch's Fox Corporation has been sued by an obscure tech company that has accused, his cable networks of defamation and contributing to the fervor that led to the siege of the Capitol. Now, this is, I don't know that this is really correct because there's this whole issue of standing. I don't know that Smartmatic can really sue somebody because of the Capitol riots because Smartmatic was not the people who they were rioting against. It wasn't like Smartmatic's offices were destroyed because of the riots. So they can accuse him of cable networks of disinformation of defamation that hurt the company, as in, you know, led to people thinking less of our company, and so we lose business as a result, despite the fact that your claims are untrue, but they can't directly sue over the siege. Or, siege is the wrong word. A siege is surrounding something so that the people inside starve to death. So, the Capitol riots, I think, would be more correct. But anyway, the suit pits Smartmatic, which provided election technology in one county, against Donald J. Trump's longtime favorite news outlet, and three Fox anchors, Maria Bartiromo, Lou Dobbs, and Jeanine Pirro, all ardent supporters of the former president. A trial could reveal how Mr. Trump's media backers sought to cast doubt on an election that delivered a victory to Joseph R. Biden Jr. and a loss to an incumbent who refused to accept reality. So, filed in New York State Supreme Court, Smartmatic's suit seeks at least $2.7 billion in damages. In addition to Mr. Murdoch's Fox Corporation, Fox News, and the three star anchors, it targets Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, lawyers who made the case for election fraud as frequent guests on Fox programs while representing President Trump. And they've requested a jury trial, interesting, has argued that Giuliani and Powell, quote, created a story about Smartmatic, and that, quote, Fox joined the conspiracy to defame and disparage Smartmatic and its election technology and software. Now, of course, Dan Stewart kind of stole the analysis I was going to do by saying we'll have to wait for the discovery to really get a sense of what went on and what who knew what and when. So for the time being, we can move on to something a little different. So maybe Maxine Waters should have to defend this in court instead of in the quasi-political trial of the Senate. But she says that Trump should be charged with premeditated murder, meaning that Trump intended for people to die, which, I mean, unless you're talking about supporting the genocide in Yemen, I think is a bit of a stretch. So Democratic Representative Maxine Waters of California Tuesday said she thinks former President Donald Trump should be charged with premeditated murder over the deadly riots at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. This is from Fox News, by the way. Quote, he absolutely should be charged with premeditated murder because of the lives that were lost for this invasion with his insurrection, she told MSNBC. Quote, for the president of the United States to sit and watch the invasion and the insurrection and not say a word because he knew he had absolutely initiated it, as some of them said, he invited us to come, we're here at the invitation of the president of the United States. This is a little much. And this is where you get, this is where these politicians get this reputation for just being over the top. It becomes impossible to take what she says seriously when she's saying that Trump was engaged in premeditated murder. That Trump said in his mental mind Trump said to himself, oh, look, riots, they're going to kill people. I want this to continue because I want people to die. That's a little much. It's a little much, Maxine Waters. And I think it smacks of a lot of the rhetoric surrounding this Capitol riot. Because, I mean, look, the Capitol riot is a terrifying example of just American politics gone berserk. It was not fun to watch, I will say that. And absolutely the people who engaged in it should be, and are being, by the way, prosecuted for their role in it. You could have a discussion over what specifically they should be charged with, but they are being prosecuted. They will go to jail. Some of them might get organic food while they're in jail, but let's not pretend that that completely obviates the unfortunate nature of ending up in prison, jail or prison. So this is the same kind of thing that you're seeing from AOC right now. And I hate talking about this because I hate just giving airtime to it, but it got me in a tizzy because they're really trying to milk this thing for all it's worth. And frankly, this is my whole take right here, that when you take something like the Capitol riot and you try to capitalize on it for political gain, that you take away from the seriousness of what actually happened. So if we go, oh my God, the people are rioting, they breached the Capitol, this is horrifying, these people need to be arrested, they need to be prosecuted, they broke the law. But then you come along and go, no, we need a truth commission, like the 9/11 commission, like the New York Times was, we talked about it in our show yesterday. We need a reality czar to crack down on misinformation on the internet, aka censor ideas we don't like. We need a domestic terrorism bill. We need to spy on people. We need to create backdoors for the government into the social media platforms so they can gather private data on people who engage in QAnon conspiracy theories. Now you have taken away from the seriousness of what happened. Just as much as people on the right who want to say it was no big deal, who want to say, oh, well, what about this summer? That's the same thing. You take an event like this, which is unfortunate and terrifying and just a crime, literally criminal, and you take away from it by turning it into a weapon for you to bludgeon your opponents with so they have to get on board with your particular agenda. It's just not good. So before we move to the kind of last little section of the show here, let's take a minute and read some comments. So, where were we? Douglas Adams would have been a great president if he embodied his inner Zaphod Beeblebrox. Man, I wish I remembered my Douglas Adams better, because I remember that whole thing with Zaphod Beeblebrox being hilarious. I'm going to have to go reread it. He was, if I remember, the president of the universe or of the galaxy or something like that. But it was good. Peter Parker says, oh my God, premeditated murder. I think I have a similar take to yours. Dan Stewart says, will House leaders take away Representative Waters' committee assignments like Taylor Greene? Well, we'll have to see. I'm not going to put my money on it. I'm going to think she's going to keep her committee assignments. Ilhan Omar may be in trouble. I know the Republicans don't have the votes to really take her committee assignments, but they are trying to. So we talked about that yesterday. Public Citizen says she is ancient and needs to retire along with Nancy, Chuck, and many others. Well, sooner or later, I mean, nature's going to kick in. How old are these people? They're in their late 70s. Well, Nancy, I think, I don't know. I don't remember how old Nancy is, but they're in their 70s. They're in their 80s. Sooner or later, nature's going to kick in and they'll just die. And so sooner or later, they will get out of the way and make room for younger and hopefully more reasonable voices. Fat Daddy Sambo says AOC creates an insurrection in my bowels. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. I really raising the level of the discussion here, but I understand the sentiment. With some of the stuff that some of the kind of public antics around all of this lately. So let's go back into this here, because I had a lengthy article I wanted to look at, but I don't think we're going to have time for it. Now, of course, going back to things like committee assignments, that brings us kind of into the impeachment trial. Now, the impeachment, very popular in Congress with the Democrats. So, as it turns out, this is conservative brief they're very excited to report that they have done a poll that reveals that 60% of battleground voters and 84% of Republicans oppose impeachment. So it may not be as popular as they want it to be, and I think this speaks to the kind of overplaying of the hand when it comes to going after Trump. Like, people hated Trump. A lot of people hated Trump, but Trump is gone. He can do no more harm. I mean, maybe he could do some cultural harm, but he can't. He has no more power. He's out of office. And so I think a lot of people see the impeachment as like kind of beating a dead horse, unless they really, really hate Trump and they just want to like take stuff away from him out of, you might even say, a sense of spite. But that's neither here nor there. This is an important story. Axios reports that the House votes to remove Marjorie Taylor Greene from her committee assignments. Now, the House Minority Leader, Representative Kevin McCarthy, had refused to do anything about Marjorie Taylor Greene. He said, look, she's one of us. There's no reason to take away her committee assignments. She's done nothing wrong while she's been in Congress. This is old stuff that she said before. And then they had this whole, I think maybe a little staged kind of thing where she got up and she apologized and said she got sucked into conspiracy theories. And I guess some Republicans actually gave her a standing ovation for that. And so the Democrats said, well, if you're not going to do it, then we're going to do it. And they have the votes in the House to get this sort of thing done. And so they have removed Marjorie Taylor Greene from all of her committee assignments. But this is dangerous. This is very dangerous. Because, as we've seen, Republicans responded by trying to take Ilhan Omar's committee assignments, basically saying these two are equivalent. That is, crazy as you might think Marjorie Taylor Greene is, Ilhan Omar is just as crazy. So this is the reason this is dangerous is because Democrats have the majority to do this stuff right now, but that majority shrank in the last election, even with the election really being about Trump. We can just imagine what's going to happen in 2022. As every time one of these parties gets into power, it seems like for the last decade, they set a new standard for breaking precedents, for cynically manipulating the rules for their own advantage. And so the other side gets a little bit of power, a little tiny majority. They do the same thing. We're rapidly reaching a point where Congress will be completely unable to do anything, that each new Congress will rescind everything the previous Congress did and nothing will get done. As happy as I am to see very little get done at the federal level, I don't know that this bodes well, because it's not exactly the federal government saying, hey guys, maybe we can do things at more of a local level. It's them being unable to get anything done. And I think ultimately it produces Capitol riots. And so we should expect more Capitol riots here coming over the next few years. So that is that. Fat Daddy Sambo says, come on, she's from Floyd County. That's just a different world. Not saying it's right, just saying crazy is more accepted out there. We talked about this at length yesterday. I'm talking about where she's from and what she's like. Yeah, so it is. It's a different world, Floyd County. Kind of like some places in the backwoods of, you know, Kentucky or Tennessee. It is a different world, and I don't think that there's a lot of people who show up in chats of shows like these that are really familiar with just how weird it can get out there. And so, this is another big one from Breitbart. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Breitbart is so excited about this, they launch an ambitious crackdown on big tech. So Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced a major push to curb big tech's political bias and censorship today, with measures, including a ban on the censorship of political candidates and mandatory opt-outs of content filters for citizens of the Sunshine State. So in a 45-minute speech, the governor identified big tech companies as the leading threat to American democracy and freedom of expression today, and pledged that Florida Republicans would take action. The new regulations announced by DeSantis include mandatory opt-outs from big tech's content filters, a solution to tech censorship first proposed by Breitbart. Now you see why Breitbart is so happy about this. So a private right of action for Floridian citizens against tech companies that violate this condition. Fines of $100,000 per day levied on tech companies that suspend candidates for elected office in Florida from their platforms. And daily fines for any tech company that uses their content and user-related algorithms to suppress or prioritize the access of any content related to a political candidate or cause on the ballot, and greater transparency requirements, some disclosures. Real quick, I want to talk about this one. So this is a big debate between people who, many of whom I sympathize with, who are kind of really into this idea that the free markets can solve a lot of these problems. And they go, well, YouTube is a private company. They can do whatever they want. Facebook is a private company. They can do whatever they want with their platform that they built. And if you don't like it, you can take your conspiracy theories and you can go home. And none of us will be any the worse for your having left. Now, of course, the other side of that argument is one that I'm also inclined to sympathize with, which is this presence of this Section 230 protection from litigation. Protection from litigation is a big deal, as we saw with Fox News, who just got hit with a $2.7 billion lawsuit because of stuff that people said on Fox News, that Rudy Giuliani came on Fox News and said, listen, Smartmatic is evil and they work for China and they have lizard people working there, or whatever it was he said. And they go after Fox News. You couldn't do that for Twitter. Rudy Giuliani could go on Twitter and say Smartmatic is evil, they have lizard people working there and they work for the Chinese, and you can't sue Twitter. So that's a particularly interesting example of the kind of protection these companies enjoy, which already separates them from what would otherwise be what you might call the fair market discipline of free enterprise that normally applies to companies like this. And then there are some shadier concerns, things like big tech's relationship with the government as a whole. And then it depends on how far you want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole to, oh, the Facebook is run by the CIA. Generally, I find that such conspiracy theories, while, to borrow AOC's phraseology, they are not literally correct, they are often semantically or morally correct, insofar as they speak to something that is a reality in effect without being correct as to the details of the situation. In fact, I'm inclined to say the same thing about QAnon, that it's, in a literal sense, it's false, that no, Democrats are not Satan-worshipping pedophiles, but it speaks to an emotional truth that many people do hold, that as far as many Q believers are concerned, Democratic elites, or elites more generally, are so different from them, are so hold values so alien to their own, that they, to put it rather bluntly, might as well be Satan-worshipping pedophiles. So it's what I call a mythical kind of reality, a mythological truth. So, greater transparency requirements. Disclosure requirements enforced by Florida's election authorities for tech companies that favor one candidate over another. Power for the Florida Attorney General to bring cases against tech companies that violate these conditions under the state's Unfair and Deceptive Practices Act. Interesting. This is the widest and most aggressive range of regulatory and legislative solutions so far proposed by any U.S. state to tackle the problem of tech censorship. So that it will be interesting to see how this plays out. And this is, once again, federalism wins the day, where Florida is now going to be the test tube, where we're going to test out some sort of we're going to experiment with restrictions on big tech, and we'll have to see how it plays out. And if it plays out well, you might start to see these regulations adopted across the country. And if they play out poorly, you might start to see other experimentation, or I suppose we'll have to just take our conspiracy theories and go home. So let's read a few comments and then we'll bring this to a close. All right. Lot of comments here. So where were we? Shilmar. Thank you, Shilmar, for that lovely face. Peter Parker says, I thought politics would lose entertainment appeal with Trump being gone. I feel like I've been proven wrong. I agree. I think, well, Trump was just the rocket fuel that got us into orbit, but we remain in astronomical, in the stratosphere, I should say, as far as political events go. Peter Parker said, so we construct arguments why wrong statements are somehow true anyway. I don't know what you're referring to. That's weird. It is weird that someone would do that. I don't know if I was doing that. I don't know. Explain what you mean, because I have no idea what you're talking about. Her Majesty says, next episode, reptilian infiltration in politics. I am worried about talking about reptilian infiltration in politics, because the lizard people might come for me, or alternately, big tech might come for me. They might say you're spreading misinformation, and then that would be the end of this show. So, I don't know. Maybe we can talk about it. We might do an episode on conspiracy theories in general and talk specifically about the lizard people one. Maybe talk a little bit about what QAnon, where QAnon goes and what they actually believe. I don't know. Reading QAnon, I get the willies. It feels weird. It's just a weird worldview. It's icky. But anyway, Peter Parker says, I was referring to AOC's statement you referred to. I think managing the power of those big tech companies, that's a huge challenge. It absolutely is a huge challenge, because the companies themselves are more powerful and have more money than small countries. They are truly massive monopolies. But of course, we have to keep in mind that Nokia was a massive monopoly. MySpace was a big tech monopoly at one point. And of course, the A&P was a monopoly. And without any government action at all, they fell from their thrones and were dashed on the rocks of competition and market discipline simply because somebody came along with a better idea. I'm very interested in this. It's Library, LBRIY. I'm going to be putting up some content over there and kind of testing that out. It's like a distributed content management system for people like me who put out content. So we'll see what happens there. It's like the blockchain-based, futuristic, neo-libertarian kind of thing. I don't really know how all of it works yet, because I just discovered it yesterday. But I think ultimately that's really what's going to happen. Somebody's going to come along with some new idea, some new way of doing things that really takes away big tech's power, the big tech giants as they currently exist, because it changes the game so radically that they can no longer compete. And no, I don't mean some startup that eventually gets bought by Facebook or gets bought by Google. I mean maybe something that makes Google's whole model of doing things obsolete. And I can't predict what it looks like, because if I could, I would create it. And then I would get credit for smashing the power of the big tech monopolies. But unfortunately for now, I'll have to sit here with my microphone and my camera entertaining all of you with my jokes and my political analysis. Oh, anyway, that brings us to the end of our hour. If you haven't already, take the opportunity and subscribe to the channel or follow the channel, depending on which platform you are watching on. Oh, this comment looks good. Let me take a look here. Peter Parker says, you're such a fresh face to all the leftist streamers here on Twitch, who often reduce themselves to just shouting capitalism is bad and everything is racist and stuff. Far be it from me to end the show before reading aloud a complimentary comment like that. Thank you, Peter Parker. My next episode will be episode 62, Capitalism is Bad and Everything is Racist. Public Citizen says, technology's going to destroy us. I see you've been reading about Elon Musk implanting neural chips in chimpanzees. That gave me the willies a little bit. I certainly don't want to live in that world. I don't need to be able to play video games with my mind. I will be perfectly fine living even into my 90s, never being able to play video games with my mind, as long as no one tries to implant anything into my brain. You got people freaking out about Bill Gates talking about vaccines already. Can you imagine what they're going to say when it comes to Neuralink? Good God. So thank you very much, Peter Parker and Public Citizen. I try to bring reason and a concern primarily with the truth to political analysis. But now I really must leave you all and go forth into the great capitalist wasteland to earn my keep under the whip crack of my evil overlords, because capitalism is bad and everything is racist. So anyway, subscribe, follow, share this channel like it's the unearned wealth of your ancestors if you haven't already. We will be back here on Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. See you, Mythos, Peter Parker, and Public Citizen. We hope to see you on Monday. Don't forget, you can go on YouTube and look at old shows and leave comments. If you have articles you want us to talk about, if you have ideas or comments or anything that you'd like to see us do a segment on and discuss, we will do that there. And we read the best comments on or from YouTube. So thank you all for watching. This has been another episode of Socratic Citizen.